by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. We're into December, so, well, we're supposed to have freaky deep snow and thick ice and sub-zero temperatures every year during this month. Right, Janet?
Yeah, that's right. It seems like that's what we used to talk a lot about was the snow and the ice. And it was always a par for the course this time of year to be talking about ice safety. And so when you brought it up earlier this week, I kind of laughed at you and was like, yeah, no, there's no ice in Wyoming. Have you not seen the winds? Have you not seen the 50-degree temperatures? But then, turns out, on some Facebook and Insta posts, there are some very daring individuals out there. So happy to talk ice safety today.
It's interesting because, you know, you drive by some of the fisheries that we have. I mean, obvious, the one Glendo, like you can see from the highway. So you could zip right by and be like, no, that looks like a boat out there to me and not an ice shanty. But
there were 5 boats on Boyson this weekend, just so you know. Yes, that was not, there were no ice shanties out there. And as far as I can tell, haven't seen enough on any of the big reservoirs, but apparently somebody's finding it somewhere. So
and I do know in some parts of the country, they have dipped down. They're in the ice fishing stages. And normally we don't even start really talking about ice fishing until late December because it's the Hog Derby is sometime in January or February. And then, you know, some of those kind of happen after the first of the year when it really gets cold.
You know, absolutely. And things have definitely changed in years past. I mean, I can remember growing up, Thanksgiving, you know, was often chukar hunting and ice fishing. It was a dual program. So things have changed a little bit with the, you know, shifting into the little bit warmer weather, a little bit later into the winter before it kind of hits again in the spring. So things have changed a little bit and just getting used to that and being aware of that and being safe in the outdoors because of that is something we all need to consider.
It just goes to show that people are chomping at the bit to get out and do something after their big game seasons are over and they're ready to be back on the water. But I brought in Matt Hahn today, fisheries expert. We're going to call him that. He enjoys that. So
that's right. We can corner him on what you might, if you were actually to find some ice and things that you might expect to find fishing, as well as some ice safety tips.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we've talked to Matt quite a bit over the last couple of weeks or a few weeks anyway, because of, you know, it was such a good fishing year and a lot of people were out on the water all year, Matt. And as we wind down 2024, I mean, have things been looking pretty good as far as what we look forward to in ice fishing?
Yeah, Drew, it should be. You know, we've got a little bit of something for everybody, I think. You know, we've got some really good trout fisheries. We've got really good walleye fisheries. Even though you don't really think of them as ice fishing species, we've got some pretty nice bass in a few places around here. Catfish and Glendo is getting to be more and more popular for ice fishermen to target. So yeah, we've got a lot of opportunity, a lot of variety, and all we need is weather to cooperate, I guess, depending on your perspective. I know guys that don't really like to ice fish and they can't wait for the lake to open up so they can get their boat back out, and other guys that just live for the ice fishing and wish it was frozen 8 months out of the year. So
my dad is in visiting and we're doing elk hunting while he's here. And if we have some time, some fishing would kind of be an interesting aspect for him. And one of the great things about having the North Platte running through Casper or, you know, right around Casper is most of the year it doesn't really freeze up until it gets really, really cold. So fishing there is a year-round opportunity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you're tough enough to stand out there when it's 10 below and windy, you could fly fish below Gray Reef Dam 365, you know. It's always open up there. Same with the Miracle Miles, always open water. You know, any of the tailwaters, because the water's coming off the bottom of the reservoir, it's warm, relatively speaking. so it doesn't freeze. So yeah, we've got open water opportunity year round and in certain places anyway.
Now, when people are out, you talked about some of the species that they're fishing for. What are most people going after when they're, you know, fishing through, you know, 8 or 9 inches of ice? Is it a walleye? Is it trout?
It's both. It's could be crappie. I mean, it depends on what lake you're at. Around here, if you're in the upper reservoirs, say Alcova, Pathfinder, Seminole, typically through the ice, the trout fishing is pretty good. Trout definitely are more active at colder temperatures, and so they're biting really well all winter usually. Walleye can be a little bit more finicky in the winter than they are in the summer, but certainly there's a lot of guys out there that have really gotten good at targeting walleye through the ice. I'm not one of them, of course. I've tried and not had a ton of luck with walleye through the ice, but there are definitely guys out there that do really well on them. So
I think that I always wonder when someone is a good fisherman in the warmth in the summer off of a boat, how easy is it to really transform to ice fishing? I mean, you really can't get to some places that you normally like to go that you know is a hot spot. So you kind of got to adjust, and you don't have the tools like you do on your boat.
Let's clarify, Drew. Are you questioning Matt as someone who catches fish off of a boat in the summer? Because I think we may have to talk about you asking him this question. I think he might strike out 365. But no, I mean, it's pretty neat that you talk about all these different species of fish and the diversity, and it really is a skill and a talent to switch from, you know, water to ice and different techniques and different bait, because fish act differently throughout the year and they feed differently. And so that's one of the things that, you know, people have to get good at reading the water. And I'm just joking with Matt. He can do that. And so
I've always heard that Janet's the one that can't catch a fish or get an elk. I don't know. I mean, I've just heard.
You are spot on all of that. It is accurate.
Well, Matt, when folks are out and doing fishing, I know that you guys are year-round doing different surveys and different research to kind of keep an eye on the way the fish react all year round. What kind of information will you look for during the ice fishing time of year as far as like anglers and talking with them?
Yeah, creel surveys, you know, most of our field work in the wintertime is relegated to doing creel surveys, where we go out and interview anglers that are out fishing and see how many fish they caught and measure them if they kept any and things like that. Obviously, doing population sampling when a lake is frozen gets to be kind of difficult. We have done some of that in the past, but it's pretty tough. You know, you did chop holes in the ice and try to get nets set under the ice. There's specialized techniques to do it, but usually it's not worth it. We can get the data that we need in the fall, usually in September, without a lot of need to do much sampling through the ice in the winter. On the rivers, like the tailwaters that stay open, there's certainly been times, depending on what we're doing, like for instance, one year at the Miracle Mile, we were looking at the rate at which the river fish are interchanging with Pathfinder reservoir fish. So we were doing pretty much around the year sampling up there. And so that's a lot easier to do on those rivers that are open. But we do a fair amount of creel on ice fishermen. And then next year, starting early this spring, we'll be doing a big creel survey at Glendoe It'll be a full calendar year. So next winter, we'll be down there a lot checking anglers that are fishing through the ice.
Will the information you get from that, will that really benefit like what it looks like in years to come?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the angler catch rate stuff, you can factor that in with what we know the trend in population is doing, and you can gain some insights into is there too much harvest? Can it support more harvest? Do we need to look at regulation changes, things like that? It's all all intertwined. It's just another small piece of the puzzle that we try to put together every year.
Which obviously, we've talked to Matt a bunch over the year about some of the stuff going on, and you can always, reach out to Game and Fish. If you have questions on that or if you see him out and about and doing those creel surveys, you can get more info. But as we are looking at the fact that some people are braving the ice that we do or don't have, safety becomes a concern because, you could think ice is a lot thicker than it is, but then you could get out and end up, waist deep in freezing cold water, and that's not a good thing.
Well, you hope that you only end up waist deep and that you don't go all the way in. That's when things get a little bit more dicey, right? But you're absolutely correct, Drew. I mean, there's a lot of information online about things that you can do when you are ice fishing, things like the buddy system, which is really critical. And if you choose not to use the buddy system, make sure that people know where you are. So if something does happen, search and rescue knows, where to look for a hole in the ice. Is that what we say? I'm not quite sure. Maybe look for your vehicle, those sorts of things. But, keeping hot liquids and dry clothes in your car is always a smart move. So if you do go in through your waist, quick, easy change is good to get you home. And thinking through things like clear ice is safer than cloudy ice, which is one that my brain never comprehends. When I'm standing out there and I can see through that ice, it freaks me out much more than when I can't see through that ice. And so, making sure that the ice is the appropriate 4 to 6 inches minimum is what we recommend. Although I'm hearing right now there's 2-inch kind of shelf ice around and which I don't think is safe, but people can do that. I mean, people throw the ladder across the ice and across the shore onto the ice, and that kind of stuff just freaks me out. But
which a lot of times at Glendo, that's kind of the situation there, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, Glendo's coming up. Water level wise is rising pretty rapidly during the winter, and so the ice freezes, and then the lake keeps coming up, and so the ice just floats. And if it's been warmer than normal, you get a ring of water around the ice. So the ice could be plenty thick if you can get out on it. And so that's where guys will bring ladders or planks, set a plank down to walk on to get across the ice that's only like an inch thick to get out onto the thicker ice. And I know a ton of people that, that's not worked out so well for them, and they've ended up luckily only, into their waist or chest deep in water. But, man, that's a real quick way to ruin your fishing trip, is to get wet up to your belly button when it's 15 degrees outside. So,
but, on that note, Drew, the North Platte Walleyes Unlimited here located in town that run around the state and do fantastic things for communities and walleye alike. They actually love to teach how to fly or how to ice fish. So like school groups, Boy Scout troops, all of those sorts of things. If you're interested, they actually have an entire trailer that they take out. They have the huts, the ice augers, everything. And so as this winter continues to develop and ice starts to form, which is not yet, but maybe someday soon it will be out there. Reach out to them. And if you don't know how to get a hold of them, definitely reach out to us and we can put you guys in touch. And they would love to take groups of folks out to learn how to ice fish.
I'm glad you mentioned that about kids, because it's important to really get them rolling early. And I know that, with groups like that, it really helps out if you learn from people that know what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely. And, one of the things, too, you mentioned about getting the kids out early. I think about my own kids and, it's fun when they're little and they can be out in the snow and the ice and sliding and playing. And then, boom, there happens to be a fish and they can, harvest that fish. And that's a great day. And now that they're a little bit older, and maybe there's not quite as much fun playing in the snow and ice, it's a little bit more difficult to get them out there. And so if you get them hooked young, that's a pretty fantastic, oh, that was a good pun there that I didn't even mean to make. If you get them hooked young, it might keep them out there a little bit more with you. And I tell you, there's nothing more fun than having a group of teenagers on the ice out there and listening to them whine and complain while drinking hot chocolate.
One of the other safety concerns that a lot of people maybe don't think about is when you're out in that cold weather and maybe you get a little bit wet or whatever, hypothermia can really set in. And I know none of us are medical experts, but you can start seeing the signs, and it's something you need to look for when you take those kids out, because the kids can really become susceptible, maybe even more than adults on that.
Absolutely. And like you said, we're not a human health agency, so we don't necessarily can't give you guys medical advice on all of the hypothermia, but you can definitely read about it online or ask your doctors about it. But, you know, watch for odd behavior when they start acting really hot and it's not. Think about that. Make sure that they're doing okay, that they're not starting to experience some of those hypothermic signs and taking their, you know, outer layers off and saying they're hot, and then they get super cold, and then you're dealing with hypothermia. So
yeah, safety, the best way to go about it. And if the ice is 2 inches, like maybe we've seen recently, it may be a good idea to shore fish.
Save Janet's heart. Stay on shore.
You know, with ice around, especially in this country around Casper, where we get a lot of wind and we get sunny days and more wind and warm spells, you know, the ice is never the same thickness everywhere. So, you know, you could go out, you know, say you're on Pathfinder and you go test the ice right at shore and, oh, 6 inches, we're good to go. Well, literally 5 feet away, it could be 2 inches. So that's always a really good thing to keep in mind, that just the nature of our climate, the way the wind blows and we get the warm spells and everything else, it's not a uniform sheet of ice. It's highly variable. And even in the dead of winter, when there's 20 plus inches of ice, there's still places on all the lakes where there's routinely, because of underwater currents and things, really thin ice. And there's, you know, like a couple spots on Pathfinder that are notorious, or every year four wheelers or something get put through the ice right there, because it's literally never thick. So it's always a really, really good idea to just check, keep a spud bar with you and just continually check the ice thickness as you go. And you know, the old adage, oh, 4 inches of clear ice is safe ice. It's like, yeah, 4 inches is safe ice, but 5 feet away, it may only be an inch thick. So there's no such thing as safe ice, I guess, is the moral of the story.
Better to be concerned than fall waist deep in what? Cold water.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, real quick, with social media, people are always reaching out to others to help them. And I've saw a post the other day where someone was saying, oh, hey, I heard that Alcova was a great ice fishing reservoir. And that's one of those reservoirs that's a little different when it comes to ice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's usually pretty sketchy. The middle part of the reservoir, it usually at some point every winter, the reservoir will completely freeze, but then the center will open up again periodically during the winter. So I would never consider the middle, like the mid part of the lake, to be safe ice. That being said, most of the bays, you know, by Oakey Beach, Black Beach, Cottonwood, most of those bays do get good ice on them. And certainly it's good ice fishing, especially for trout. It can be fantastic trout fishing through the ice. But yeah, if you go to Alcova, just be aware that the middle part of that lake, areas around Fremont Canyon especially, you know, such a deep lake, and the way the wind just rifles down that canyon and comes down that slope, it really impacts the ice formation out there in the middle of the lake. So don't go, you know, ripping across there on your side by side or something, because you'll probably have a bad day.
Yeah. Well, again, safety. So if you're heading out, have fun, but be safe. And Janet, Matt, we appreciate it. And obviously, if you have questions or more, go check them out, wgfd.yo.gov.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where we're into December. And Brian, it looks like Christmas shopping is fully underway.
It is fully underway, and but it sure doesn't feel like Christmas.
It doesn't, does it?
No, we just haven't had the snow, and it's hard to get in that shopping spirit without the snow and the reminder that Christmas is just a few weeks away.
Now, if you would have told me at Halloween that we would be into December and thinking that Christmas wasn't coming because no snow, you would have been fooling me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're up here hunting elk and sweatshirts, yeah. You know? I mean, like, who would have thought in December?
I know. And Dad's here, and he was a little nervous about, cold, Wyoming cold, and it's warmer here than it is back in Illinois.
It's a dry cold.
Yeah, that's right. Well, one of the things that we talk about a lot is layering up, and the weather we're experiencing right now is a prime example of that.
Yeah, well, right now it's nice to just have, something that's going to break the wind, so nice windbreaker, maybe a pair of long johns under, even just jeans just to kind of layer up a little bit there. But yeah, just keeping covered up, I mean, that's the biggest thing with the weather, if you can keep the heat in, you're going to be a lot more comfortable.
And obviously you guys have a full section here in the store that'll help them do that.
Yeah, great selection of boots and hats and gloves and that kind of stuff. And as soon as we get that, next snowstorm, there's gonna be a big mad rush for it because everybody forgets that their kids outgrew their boots or they're only have one glove coming back from a daycare, that type of stuff. So, with the holidays coming up, just thinking about all the fun things to kind of do, around the Christmas time when people have some extra time off or family in town, we'll be up snowshoeing here shortly and cross country skiing. And
be careful when you say we.
Well, I know you're an avid snowshoer.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I told somebody the other day I did that twice for fun, and that's the last time I'll do that for fun.
Well, you just got to stop hanging out with long legged guys.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it becomes a problem after a while.
It does. Yes.
Of course, get in here and check this out. And I know that we had just talked where goose season had been closed down, and now we are back fully in. So having that proper attire for that and all the shells, and even if you need a new gun, that would be a good time to get it.
Yeah, we've actually had a pretty good push on shotguns. We have a lot, of course, on the floor and a lot in the back. So, I mean, if you're in the store and you don't see what you're looking for, feel free to, ask one of the guys behind the counter if we happen to have one. I had a gentleman the other day that, we had two of the three that he was looking for. So that just weren't on the floor. So it's good to ask that question. And shotgun shells, pheasant season still rolling in a lot of areas. So we've got all the ammo and all the supplies you're going to need.
Yeah, get in here and check it out, and maybe you're still like us doing a last minute late season hunt and you're going in a little deeper. You got all the camping gear and cold weather gear too.
Yeah, still selling a few jet boils. The Garmins are still pretty popular, and anything that you would still need, just replacement, like replacement blades. We still selling some packs. Some guys have expressed, to their wives apparently that, they'd sure like a nice hunting pack for Christmas, and we've got a big selection of those as well.
Well, get in here and check it out, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, or you can go online, rockymountainsports.com, start your shopping experience there. And don't forget, if you're looking into 2025 already, snowmobile stickers, even the state park stickers are all available now.
Yeah, and I think it's an early bird for state parks. So, don't wait till April when you want to go fishing. Get those under your belt now and just be done with it at a discounted price.
And by the way, I point out that if you have a 2024, it's good until the end of January. But if you want to buy for next year, do it now. Stocking stuffers are great ideas for that.
Yeah, it's a great stocking stuffer. Of course, we also have gift cards, which is always great for the person that you think they have everything that they already need, but a gift card goes a long ways.
Yeah, if you will, text my wife and tell her that. Hey, Dana, Drew wants a gift card.
Drew wears a size $100 gift card.
That's right. Get out here and check them out. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Here we are back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports with Brian Woodward, where we're about to tackle the first elk hunt for my dad and my second elk hunt. And it's pretty exciting. You just went whitetail hunting a little while ago, and Dad and I were talking last night about how intense they get about you know, showers and scent free, and wash your clothes and scent free, and you know, it's a little different than out here.
Oh, I thought the guys were completely crazy. I mean, you know, they're, you know, put this ozone machine above your head in the stand, and when you get, you know, get back, you're going to take a shower and put all your clothes in this ozone locker, and then we've got a map on the wall with tree stands and then wind and which ones you can hunt during which wind, and I mean, holy cow, it was just over the top.
And my dad Roger is here, and Dad, you were just explaining exactly the same thing, what you do when you go out on a tree stand hunt.
Right. Yeah, I go take a shower with the scent-free soap, you know, and then spray my clothes with the scent-free spray. And then I use a dirt scent cover, yeah, and walk one way in, one way out. Yeah.
You don't pee on the ground around your stand. You pee in a pickle jar.
Yeah,
take a jar with you.
Yeah. When I was growing up, I think I was, 16, 15 when I started really deer hunting on our own. And I would put they have these wafers that are dirt scented, mm-hmm. and you put that in your clothes bag the night before. And I mean, it's different out here, though.
That's definitely kind of like that archery season kind of mentality, you know, for us out here, although most of us aren't hunting out of tree stands, but we are doing, you know, the dead downwind, scent-free, the dirt wafers, you know, on the packs, that kind of stuff, spraying your shoes, you know, with the scent eliminators as you're going in. But, you know, I guess it just seemed like the experience I had with the deer hunt was like, boy, this is just a little more over the top than what I'm even used to for even archery season.
Yeah, you think about 411 yards is what I shot mine at from last year, and we jumped out of the truck and ran around the truck, and you know, it wasn't much to it, but
right.
You know, I think that's what Dad wants on his hunt, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm not into hiking too much. Up and down and in and out and around.
Well, the main idea behind most people with cow hunting is that if you can't shoot them near a road, then you don't shoot them.
You're right. Yeah. Legally not from the road, but near the road.
Near the road, correct.
What he said, you have to be off the main road before, you know, because we don't want to have Game and Fish call me like they do sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, I heard this. Oh, crap. Here we go.
I do want to be able to go home like next week.
Yeah. Right.
One of the other interesting parts is, you know, when you get out and you do your hunting and everything, and it's more of a group mentality with Tony and Commission and all their guides and stuff. So it's a little different, too.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially during the cow season, and, you know, you've got a handful of guys that are up, you know, trying to, you know, harvest their animals at the same time. It's just like fishing. You know, you got to fish where the fish are, and you got to hunt where the elk are. And, you know, we're talking that, you know, an area of, you know, 300,000 plus acres that, you know, those elk can be just about anywhere. And so there's just a lot of covering ground. You know, it's a lot of driving up draws and looking up valleys and looking down valleys and just really covering those ground, because those elk, they're not necessarily where you think they're going to be.
Right. And, you know, I'll tell you, Tony called the other day and said, listen, they've been hunting pretty hard. We're toward the end of the season, and they're a little skittish now, so we may have to take a little different angle. And it's kind of interesting that I don't have to think about what that angle is when, you know, you go through an outfitter like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously when they're looking at even a big area like that, you know, those herds start kind of herding up, and so they get a little bit more skittish of vehicles. They're kind of, you know, maybe even more aware of when they hear a gunshot, you know, and just those ears perk up, and especially when you've got big groups of elk that are, you know, 100, 200, 300 plus head, that's a lot of eyes looking back at you.
It sure is, and I know it's a little different. Then how do you gear up on for something like this, you know, coming from out of the deer stand last week into an opportunity like this?
I'm pretty excited to see the whole process, actually, you know, the setup, you know, how they locate the elk, how do they know where they're at, you know, where they've been, where they're going to, you know, the moving in and moving out. It's going to be pretty interesting. It's going to be a lot different than the, you know, the 5 acres that I hunt around my house.
Yeah. Well, like you said, 300,000, you know, acres. Right. That's a lot different.
Right.
And I think when you're looking at deer, I mean, a lot of times they stay within a 1 to 2 mile radius of, you know, they just kind of always circle in that area, and they're not roaming and as nomadic as elk are. You know, elk will cover 100 miles in a few days.
Right. I have 3 deer stands set up and I can see the porch light on my house from all three of them. And we kill deer every year.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And, you know, and it's such an interesting mentality in the difference of that where, you know, you've been hunting the same area my whole life, sure.
Since I was a kid.
So then that's 46 years that you've been in the same place killing deer every year.
Yeah.
So it really is kind of a, you know, it's going to be a little different. It's going to be hunting to the second degree.
Right. I always come across a better place, and I always think, I'm going to move my stand over there. You know, and then my son's like, why? You kill a deer right there every year. Yeah. Why are you going to move?
Right.
You know, yeah. I'm like, well, that's a good point.
Well, it's going to be an exciting time. And of course, next week we're going to be doing the show from camp with everybody in tow to kind of wind down the season, really, and get prepared. Because I know we had talked a little bit earlier, you know, goose season is in full swing now. And you can see that you're kind of teetering on the – it's like in the movies when you start fading into two different scenes. You can see Brian's mind going from, all right, I'm over here, let's go.
Yeah, well, I pretty much have put all the big game stuff away and, you know, shotguns in the garage now and decoy trailers loaded up. And I've had the dog out quite a few times duck hunting. So, you know, he's got some good swimming in and kind of learning the process out there. So, looking forward to the next few months.
Yeah, definitely exciting times here in central Wyoming and all over, really. And, you know, we talked earlier last week with Game and Fish. They've been doing some meetings about the mule deer and have had really good response. You know, people that have listened to this show that are there. And, you know, it's important, especially with the mule deer, that, you know, the people are concerned about the herds and the herd sizes and the future.
Yeah, that snowstorm we had, 2 years ago, three years ago? I mean, I think it in certain parts of the country here, it really, really devastated the herds. And, you know, we've always had a problem with deer in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. We're just getting good quality. And there's a lot of people that, you know, want to argue, you know, whether there should be a two-point restriction, four-point restriction. Maybe, you know, you just close it down for a year and try to get those genetics back up and just give them some reprieve. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I think the Game and Fish overall does a pretty good job of it. You know, there's obviously everyone's going to have their own opinions on how they want things managed, but hopefully with the public response and feedback, you know, they'll come up with a good resolve.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that if you haven't made that comment yet, you can always reach out to Game and Fish. Go to wgft.wild.gov. You know, we talk to Janet every week and a lot of the biologists that are, you know, boots on the ground, and they want to know what you want to, you know, offer up suggestions or questions. So get out and do that. And if you have a hunt left, make sure to make the best of it by stopping here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. Back, it's Drew and my dad, Roger, as we have geared up for elk hunting camp. As we're heading up, and you know, we have spent a little time over the last, gosh, I guess a year since I started going up last year to talk to the outfitter from Cedar Ridge Outfitters, Tony Kaiser, and he's like, hey, get your dad to come up here. I think he'll really enjoy it. So we really made a year of planning to get this happen, and really I wasn't real sure, you know, being a resident now, but as a non-resident, when I moved here, I got a hunting license or a fishing license. So it really wasn't that big of a deal. But when you go hunting here in Wyoming, it's a little different. And so we weren't sure what it was going to take to bring Dad in to hunt for elk. And really, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, it cost a little bit of money, but outside of that, it was pretty simple.
No, it was pretty pretty simple process, and actually the amount I was kind of surprised wasn't that bad either, including the elk tag plus the conservation stamp, and went smooth.
Yeah, and it was just over $300 I think to get that all done, and then we went out to Stockenhoff's and got sighted in on a rifle that we're not going to use, but you know, a high powered rifle like that in these elements, something that you really haven't done,
right? And back home in Illinois, and we don't shoot rifles during deer season, so it was different. It was a little different shooting long range, you know, and then shooting a big gun.
Yeah, I and boy, you're. Shoulder will feel it tomorrow, I guarantee
you. Right, yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think out of so far? I mean, we really haven't even gone out in the field or anything, but with interacting with Brian a little bit earlier on the show and getting out and shooting the big rifle and getting the license, I mean, now the experience is here. So really can't go down. You know, I mean, there's really it's just can go up.
Right. It's been pretty good. It's gone real smooth. Brian was very informative. Kind of gave me an advantage knowing what I needed to do when I got here. So that made it smooth. And then I'm pretty excited about, I've never been elk hunting before. So here hunting in the wide open areas, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, like we talked with Brian, you just came down from the deer stand a few days ago with a crossbow hunt, but now rifles in the open area. And, you know, I'll tell you, we were out at Steckenhoff's earlier, and a gentleman came up, and he's like, well, there's like a 10-mile-an-hour crosswind, and it's coming out of it's blowing to the southeast. Has it really messed up your ammo? And I'm like, no, we just haven't hit very good. And, you know, we were pretty consistent, even not even thinking about the wind. But then he started thinking about, oh, well, that's another variable that you have to add.
Right. You know, hunting with a crossbow, you know, I'm shooting at top end is 40 yards. And now to start shooting at 100 yards plus, you know, yeah, you got to figure in a little distance, wind, you know, the cold variables. So it's going to be different.
It sure is. And I'll tell you, when you're sitting out there and you want to, your mental state has to be, okay, well, I'm out in the open. I have shooting sticks maybe, or I'm laying on the ground, or, you know, using something to steady myself. And we were trying to use different things to steady ourselves. And until we had a solid base, it wasn't much steady.
No, there was a lot of weaving going on. You know, it's the first couple of rounds I shot, I was like, shoot between the shakes. So, but we finally got it leveled out, and we got anchored on that shooting stage, and it worked pretty good.
Well, we're going to be on next week from camp. We're going to do the whole show there at Cedar Ridge Outfitting. And I'll tell you that it's quite the experience, especially for the first round. I remember last year being amped up and really excited because, you know, it's an exciting thing for someone that's never hunted. And if you were a family that maybe you weren't outdoors men and women and you're looking into that, make sure that you go get your safety cards and go through the safety classes and really, it could be a family adventure anytime you go out into the outdoors. And maybe you're not even a hunter, but you want to get out with the rest of the family. It's okay. You can get out. You don't have to hunt, and especially here in Wyoming. You can have a couple of folks with you. If they're not hunting, you can do that. And, you know, maybe even a father-son, a mother-daughter, a father-daughter, or the entire family. Go out and enjoy the outdoors. And, you know, it will be time to apply for your licenses for 2025. I know as an out-of-state hunter, you have to do that by the end of January, and then we have until the end of May for residents. But, you know, keeping an open mind of maybe what you want to hunt for in 2025, now is a great time to start thinking about it. Next week, we'll recap how the adventure of the Kirby hunting trip has gone for elk hunting. So come on back and join us. And remember, you can always check out all of our different episodes on demand at the Radio Stations app.
Like a good ground squat. Cut 'em all, Jack. Cut 'em all, Jack. Cut 'em all, Jack. Cut 'em all, Jack. Cut 'em all, boy.
It's Cut 'Em All Jack from Steve Conover, a good friend of mine, wrote those songs for the Robertsons and some of their earlier DVDs before they became the Duck Dynasty. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. If you want to find out more about Steve, you can hit him up online, steveconovermusic.com, or like his Facebook page, Hardcore Hunting Music. Thanks again for tuning in to Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, presented by Rocky Mountain Discount Sports and the Brooks Company. We're back next week with another great episode.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.